So we're just in the middle of recording the third series and another afternoon play of Craven, and the series is A Woman's Hour on Radio 4. I'm with the writer Amelia Bulmore, and tell us about Craven.
Well, Craven actually started life as a TV script 10 or 12 or 13 years ago, a long time ago. And it was written, very, very nearly got made, and then it didn't, which can happen. And I forgot all about it. And then a few years later, I got a phone call saying, how about pitching it for radio? It got commissioned as radio, and we made Craven, and it worked beautifully. It was really well cast and seemed to go down well, and Radio 4 have appetite for returning characters. So they asked for more, and we're now on the third and fourth, and it's just great to have this background of things you know about the characters and actors who return, and a place where we record it and a way we record it. So it's got a really lovely sort of familiar feel now.
People really, really warm to Craven. What is it they like about this series?
Well, Craven is played by Maxine Peake, who has a sort of particularly likeable quality. Firstly, you trust her. You believe every word she says. So there's nothing generic about how she sounds. So she brings a very, very real voice and quality to it, which I think is its sort of USP. I try and think of cases which are sort of interesting and contemporary, and she's got two interesting colleagues, and the dynamic between them is good, and the chemistry between those actors is good. It's a simple formula, but I think it's just, it sort of is greater than the sum of its parts because of who does it and how they do it.
The third series is on the last week of August on Radio 4, and this is a big storyline. So just talk me through this storyline, why you wanted to tell it and how the process has evolved.
Well, it came about because in Craven 2, we set up this gangland lord, Tony Lau, who they're after, and they think he's going to be behind a dangerous dog and drug story. And they never find Tony Lau because he's too deeply buried by the infrastructure he's built around him that protects him. And then we said it'd be really good, having left an appetite for Tony Lau, that we find something that Tony Lau is behind. And I read something in the newspaper not long after that about a cannabis factory that had been raided, and it turned out that it was being staffed by trafficked children. And I thought, well, if you're looking for a story about underworld and organised crime and something with fingers that reach far and travel all over the world, that's a really good starting place. So I looked into those kinds of stories and I was amazed by how much there was going on. And so we put Tony Lau behind it.
This is quite an intense story, and it's become a very big story as we've been developing scripts. Talk about how we cope with that within five short eps on Woman's Hour.
Well, five short eps is quite a good structure for this kind of story. The structure is kind of, you go into a room, you find a door, you go through the door, there's another room, you go through that room, there's another door. So you can end each episode with a kind of door through to a deeper world or a stranger world. Craven's investigation starts, as it always does, with a body. So who is the victim? What's the story? Why is this person dead? What's this person's life? And as they begin to look into those questions, they find this world of cannabis factories in Manchester and the people who are working there and how they've arrived at working there. So there's a whole universe of organised crime that this body leads them to.
A lot of the police dramas are based on the sort of shape of a police drama for TV often, and they're not necessarily very real-world biased, and that's fine because they're sort of very stylistic. With this one, it's very real-world biased, and I was astounded by the facts behind this storyline. Was there anything that you learnt during the process of researching this that you were particularly surprised by?
Well, my weakness is details. I'm always absolutely gripped by details. I was watching a film that had been made of a police raid of a cannabis factory. And in this cannabis factory, which was manned, the gardeners, the people who were actually watering and maintaining and harvesting this crop, were children, number one. But number two, there was a shrine. So it was a ordinary terraced house, stripped out, with a jungle in it, under these white canopies. And then in one corner where the living quarters were, which were very, very meagre, was a little shrine for protection and good luck to Buddha. And it had incense sticks and fruit. And I was just so struck by that little corner from another part of the world, from another kind of believe from a faith in luck and good fortune in the middle of this crazy sort of almost fairy tale, unpleasant setup.
I was really shocked that I didn't know a lot of this stuff, because I live in the area that we're talking about, and this feels very under my radar. I missed it completely. Particularly the sort of global human trafficking situation, which is effectively modern-day slavery.
Yeah, I just didn't realise the scale of it. I just did not realise how many people are moved against their will around the world all the time. And there's some extraordinary figures about how many jumbo jet loads of people it is. And it's an absolutely astonishing amount of people. And people who are doing work for no money, and people who are doing work against their will, and people who are not living where they choose to live and not living on terms they choose to live on. But it's all kept hidden. And it's the shocking thing is the proximity of it. So I think, in fact, Craven looks at this statistic in the story, but I want to find out the number of people believed to be slaves now in the world, and it turns out it's 27 million. You think, but it's banned, it's over. No, it is banned, but it's doing very well. It's alive and kicking.